Okay, so starting again. Om Ganat Shaganjana Shilakya Taksuram Niditam Yena Tasmai Shigurvena Mahaso. It's Lord Varaha's appearance day. And as we find in the Bhagavatam in the first canto, Ete Changsa Kalak Pumsa, Krishna's two, Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as I mentioned before, you will find some arguments about this in South India. Because they say that. Eyeball in the vein. Good, good. I was worried. I was going to call you just to make sure everything was all right. Okay, that's great. Yeah, we really miss you here. Everything's real dull without the kids and you.
Thanks.
It's like death here with all these old people.
Oh.
Anyway, the kids are a lot of fun. Thanks for coming and bringing them and everything like that. That's all right. I mean, plenty of lighters around here. Oh, you mean the lighter for the stove or what? Oh, I don't care about that. We can always get matches. That's not a problem. That's not a problem. Just keep it. You know, it's you don't send it back. Don't send it back by mail or anything. Yeah. All right. Thank you. So we'll see you soon. Have a safe trip. Hare Krishna. Okay. Take three.
Okay.
Maybe you switch it off.
No, I mean, it's important. I mean, these things are. Anyway, so getting back to Lord Varaha, in South India, there's some controversy. I mean, they'll actually argue with you. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a sort of humorous discussion with Balabhavata, Balabhavata, in South India at the Sri Rangam temple. And Balabhavata, of course, is the father of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And so they were just discussing about, you know, who is superior, Lakshmi or the gopis, etc. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first said that, I think your Lakshmi has some fault because she's supposed to be the most chaste person, yet she wants to associate with Krishna. And is that so chaste? I mean, she's supposed to be with Narayan all the time, you know, on the chest of Narayan. And Balabhavata said, actually, Krishna is another form of Narayan. So, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, okay, I understand that. But in spite of executing all of her austerities, she's unable to associate with Krishna. So why is that? And Balabhavata said, this goes beyond my intelligence. I can't understand these things. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to explain that because she was attached to her opulent position of Lakshmi. You understand? Lakshmi has Lakshmi. You know, very opulent dress, opulent position, opulent worship. And in Braj, everything is very simple. You know, everything is just like very spontaneous and simple. And, you know, everybody's just like relaxed, more relaxed than in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha is very much awe and reverence. So, in this way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu persuaded Balabhavata and, of course, his brother, Prabhananda Saraswati, and Gopal Bhatta, who was Gopal Bhatta at that time, not Gopal Bhatta Goswami, about the superiority of the Braj pastimes, especially the superiority of Brajendranandana, Krishna, in Vrindavan. Because in Vrindavan, Krishna exhibits the topmost intimacy. And in order to have that topmost intimacy with Krishna, you have to sort of, you know, put away all your other desires, even for opulent worship of God or any position or anything, in order to associate with Krishna in the spiritual world. So it requires the most surrender. You understand? Plus, Krishna exhibits much more characteristics, much more intimate characteristics and pastimes than Lakshmi Narayan or Narayan exhibits. So anyway, so we understand through logic and reasoning, not only through Shastra, that Krishna is the original form of Godhead. Or as Prabhupada said, it's a higher understanding when you know a man at home, or a wife knows a man at home, knows him at work. Like, for example, you know, Sita is married to Radharaja. So you know more about Radharaja than, you know, one of his secretaries at work or one of his, you know, employees, right? And he could just fire them. Can't fire you.
Could.
No. No, I mean, very Krishna conscious marriage is eternal. Life after life, you know, back to Godhead, etc., like that. So he's happy with that. So the point is that's a much closer relationship. So the closer relationship is, in one sense, higher. Or, you know, we could use the word better. Although, wouldn't be better for one of Radharaja's employees to have that sort of relationship with him. It's best for them to have their relationship with him, and it's best for you to have your relationship with him. Even though yours is higher, then they can only have their relationship because that's their constitutional position in this world. You understand?
Mm.
So for them, it's the best. You understand? For the Vaikuntha people, they have the best relationship for themselves. So it's not that we should preach to them, you know, you're in Maya, because you don't have the best. Yeah.
But doesn't Chaitanya Mahaprabhu allow people to have, like, an expansion in Vaikuntha and one in...
Yes. But he also has devotees who are specifically... Mm. Like Murari Gupta specifically attached to Lord Ram. You know, he doesn't. Murari Gupta, there's no indication that Murari Gupta has any sort of relationship or situation in the Braj pastimes. Of course, in Chaitanya's pastimes, he does. But there's no indication because he's Hanuman. So there are specific tastes that devotees. For him, that's best. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tested him, just like Rupa and Sanatan tested their brother Anupama. And Rupa and Sanatan, and also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, told these specific individuals, don't just chant Sita Ram, Sita Ram, Sita Ram, you know, chant Hare Krishna. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't pull their mind away from Lord Ramchandra. And eventually, Lord Chaitanya said, praise them. He said, this is actually a wonderful servant who never neglects their master. And a master who never neglects the servant. So this is a very exalted position. Of course, yes, a lot of the residents of Braj also have their, let's say, counterparts or expansions in the different abodes. We're talking mainly about the Nitya Parshadas, and these are the eternal residents of Braj. We're not talking about necessarily about you and me, if we go back to Godhead. It's the Nitya Parshadas, you know, the eternal residents, like Lalita, Vishaka, Nanda Maharaj, others like that. And they certainly, and the Coward Boys, what is it, Subal expands as Garuda.
But any sadhaka with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can go to Goloka.
Yeah, any sadhaka with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also can be in Goloka, but he also can be in Ram's pastimes. But it's generally they're in Goloka. Generally they're in Goloka. And generally we can say that the... followers of Lord Nityananda have a sakya or friendship relationship with Krishna. Generally, there are exceptions.
Mm.
And generally we say the followers of Lord Chaitanya have the madhurya or conjugal relationship. Anyway, so Lord Varaha is a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And actually the plenary portions come from the Shirodakshai Vishnu in this world. You understand, they actually come from the... Whereas Krishna doesn't come from the Shirodakshai Vishnu. Krishna comes directly from the spiritual world. And when Krishna appears, all the multifarious incarnations appear within him. So Lord Varaha is, just his ontological position, he is actually the plenary portion. Plenary portion means he's on the same level as Krishna as far as the power is concerned. He's Krishna himself, but just exhibiting a different aspect to his personality, not the fullness. Just exhibit. So we have to understand Lord Varaha is God. That's the first thing. And Lord Varaha, as all the incarnations appeared, as Krishna says in the Gita, what is it, Purchanaya Sadanam Vinashaya Chadushkritam, to annihilate the miscreants and to protect religious principles and save the devotees, etc., like that. However, Lord Varaha, as all the incarnations do have, has his internal reasons for coming down. And basically those internal reasons are to enjoy. Because the Lord can accomplish the killing of the demons and annihilating the miscreants and protecting the devotees. He can accomplish that by his energies. So he doesn't have to come. Like Hiranyaksha, who was killed by Lord Boar, doesn't have to be killed by Lord Boar. He could have been killed by Durga. She's certainly capable of doing that. So in the case of Hiranyaksha, Lord Boar actually, and Krishna and Narayan, made the arrangement that his devotee would come down so he could fight with him. Like you have these two devotees, Jai and Vijay, who are the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha. Like in the Christian world, we call it St. Peter or something like that. You've heard of St. Peter?
Yeah.
So we have St. Jai and St. Vijay, who are guarding the gates of Vaikuntha, the pearly gates. It's interesting that in the Christian world, they talk about this, the seventh heaven or the seven gates to heaven. And in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you have Gopu Kumar going through seven gates to meet Lord Vishnu.
Really?
Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, there's seven gates, and each one is more opulent than the other, and each one has a gatekeeper who's stronger than the others. And anyway, it's a real interesting description. So, anyway, getting back to the point, we all know that Lord Narayan, arranged for Jai and Vijay to be cursed by the four Kumaras so they could come down and take birth as demons. So Lord Narayan could enjoy this exchange. Now we understand the Stai Bhavas, that is the original relationship or mood of relationship that one has, are of five. You know, you have your Shanta Ras, Yadasya Ras, Sakya Ras, Vatsalya Ras, and Madhurya Ras, you know, or for those of you who don't understand Sanskrit, that's the peaceful Ras, Shanta, that's servitude, friendship, parental, and conjugal. So you have these five different rasas. But there's also indirect rasas, like chivalry, ghastliness, humor. You understand? That was the wrong subject. Humor. Humor. You know, and chivalry is like, I don't know if you ever heard of this story about this English knight or king or something, Sir Walter Raleigh, who put his cape on the road so the Queen of England could cross the road because the road was muddy. That's chivalry. Like chivalrous. Or the knights in the UK. You've heard of the knights in the UK? Where they would dress up in their armor and joust. You've heard of that before? And that's that's sort of a chivalrous thing. It's not like modern day fighting, terrorism and everything like that. Chivalry is when it's basically a Kshatriya type of thing. Where people enjoy fighting, but it's half a game, and sometimes it's serious. Sometimes you kill a person. But like in the Battle of Kurukshetra, at night they would meet and eat together sometimes. That's sort of a chivalrous relationship. During the day it's pretty serious. A lot of them got killed. So the Lord enjoys these relationships. It's like in Ayurveda you have the basic taste, like sweet and sour, and then they're mixed with other tastes, you know, secondary tastes. So actually the word rasa means taste. So there's secondary rasas and primary rasas, and there's five primaries. So the Lord likes to taste these, your chivalry and ghastliness and humor, as I explained before, adbhuta, wonder. And so in order to do that, it sometimes requires someone to come down to this earthly plane to exchange those mellows with Krishna. And that's why Jai and Vijay were cursed, so that Krishna could enjoy fighting with him. Because when Krishna fights, generally, he prefers to fight with a devotee. I mean, if it's a non-devotee, he just doesn't want to lay hands on him. For example, that person, Kalyavana. Does anyone remember the story, Kalyavana? Mm-hmm. There was this Kalyavana demon. I mean, just a Yavana. Yavana means Germany. Someone from Turkey. No, someone from Turkey or Greece. Prabhupada said that.
Makes sense, yeah.
Prabhupada said the Yavanas went to Turkey and Greece. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even the names of the places, like Turkey, ugh, and Greece. I mean, just even the names make you feel bad, you know? Right? You never thought about that before?
No, I never thought.
Greece with turkeys, ooh. So Kalyavana was a low-class person, an actual demon. And he challenged Krishna to a fight. But Krishna didn't want to touch the guy. Because, you know, I don't want to fight this guy. You know, he's just a yavana. He's not even a devotee. So what Krishna did is he led the guy on a chase. And they were running around, and Kalyavana thought, this Krishna, he's a coward. So Krishna was running. Finally, he ran into this cave where this devotee, Muchukunda, was resting. You know the story. Muchukunda, oh, welcome.
Sorry, we are late. We just arrived when you started.
No, I understand. Muchukunda was a great personality, a great king, who had been fighting on behalf of the demigods. And after he won the battle on behalf of the demigods against the demons, the demigods said, you know, what do you want? We'll give you any benediction you want. And sometimes you're just so damn tired, you just want to take a nap without having your phone go off or anyone disturb you. So he said, you know, because people do disturb you even if you're a king. So he said, I want the benediction that I can sleep and sleep and sleep. And if anyone wakes me up, they'll die. Because I'll just look at them and they'll burn to ashes. So he had this wonderful benediction. And so Krishna knew about that. And so Krishna runs in this cave, followed by Kalyavana, who was thinking that he was going to kill Krishna. He thought, this Krishna is a coward. Krishna hides in the corner of the cave. And there is Muchukunda, lying there, sleeping, you know, with a blanket over his head. You know, obviously it was a little cold in the cave. So naturally, Kalyavana thinks, you know, Krishna's hiding out, like the old stork routine, you know. And the storks are supposed to put their head in the sand. You never heard about that before? Yeah. Yeah. So he thought, you know, just like little kids, sometimes they pull the cover on their heads when they don't want to see a ghost. So he thought, Krishna's just scared of me. And he thought, that's Krishna. And he just like gave a big swift kick to Kalyavana. To Muchukunda, I'm sorry. When Kalyavana gave a big swift kick to Muchukunda. Muchukunda opens his eyes. You know, just they're a little tear. You know, when you get first wake up, it's like, He opens his eyes, looks out, boom, instant cremation.
Clean job.
Yeah, that was a clean job. No need to call the crematorium or anything like that. So the guy was burnt to ashes. And Krishna came out and congratulated him and said, I didn't really want to touch that creep. Because he wasn't my devotee. So when Krishna fights, he likes to fight his devotee. I mean, it's fun. I mean, who wants to fight a moochy guy? Isn't it? Just like we had... Oh, I don't want to use it. Just like... I mean, he's a great devotee, but just like the electrician who came in the other day, his feet were smelling bad. I mean, you wouldn't want to have a fight with him. So Krishna considers people who are not his devotees as like, you know, they're just not, doesn't want to go near him. Because they don't want to see him either. I mean, it's in their hearts, that's for sure. But still, at the same time, Krishna loves them. But still, to deal with them in such an intimate way is like having a nice, chivalrous relationship. No way. So Krishna wants to fight with his devotees. And that's why Krishna made the arrangement. This is all the introduction to the Varaha story. For Jayan Vijaya to be cursed. Okay. So as far as Hiranyaksha is concerned, he was the younger brother of Hiranyakasipu. And... That's Aksha. It's interesting. I don't know if you've ever seen any James Bond movies.
Yeah.
Goldfinger?
Yeah.
Well, his name means gold eye. Aksha. Hiran Yaksha. Aksha. Aksha. Hiran Aksha. Or Yaksha. Anyway, or Golden Yaksha. But either one of the two. But basically, it can be understood as gold eye. Mr. Gold Eye. And his brother was Mr. Goldbed. So it's just like one of those movies, you know, Mr. Goldeye. So Mr. Goldeye, he was fooling around with the Earth planet. And actually Prabhupada talked about disturbing the balance of the Earth planet. He says like modern oil exploration nowadays. Mm. And even when Prabhupada was present, they weren't exploring or digging into the Earth to the extent that they're digging in the Earth today. Now they have this, what's called fracking. I don't know if you've heard of fracking before. Where they pump in like, you know, steam and everything like that into the Earth, chemicals. All these chemicals, and people turn on their faucets, and if they light a lighter under their, you know, the faucet, the water faucet, it catches on fire, because methane or some other gas comes out. So, I mean, nowadays they're doing far worse. So the Earth's orbit gets disturbed. And so Prabhupada said it's something like the people who are exploring for oil nowadays. So we can also understand that the Earth's orbit and also the functioning of the climate, like people are talking about climate change right now, and just the general balance of the Earth is being disturbed. I mean, maybe the Earth isn't going to fall into the Garbhodak Ocean, but the Earth's well-being is being threatened. And that's, you can see that. You can see that by men. I mean, it's interesting. Sometimes I give people this riddle. I say, all right, what's the most dangerous animal on the Earth that kills more other animals, that creates more problems for any other animal? What's the animal?
Human being.
And even the scientists understand that. I was in a zoo one time, and they had all these cages, you know, with the tigers and lions and cobras and zebras. That's not dangerous. But anyway, and then they said, there was a sign, this is the most dangerous animal known to mankind. And it was a mirror there. So I thought, you know, this is actually true. So, and also the, many people have this hypothesis called the Gaia hypothesis. Anyone heard of that before? Interesting hypothesis. That it's true, because we understand the Earth is Bhumi. Just like when the Earth is disturbed, Bhumi goes to Lord Brahma, and the demigods go to Lord Brahma to complain, and then Lord Brahma and the demigods go to the shore of the ocean of milk, and then there's an incarnation that comes. Confirmed. Because they communicate with Lord Vishnu, Shiradakshai Vishnu, who manifests the incarnations, as I mentioned before. So the Bhumi, Earth is a person. I mean, just look, it's a person on what we call a macrocosmic scale. You know, we're a person on a medium scale, let's say a one-celled creature is a person on a microcosmic scale, right? Or an atom, even. That's even microcosmic. Or nano. In modern parlance, it's a nanoscale. But, so you know, the whole universe is a person. I mean, like we hear about the Lord's body is the universal form, right? The whole universe. And also, in one sense, we can even consider that the whole universe can be, in one sense, Lord Brahma's body. So there's personhood on different scales. Think about it for a second. It's pretty bewildering. Pretty interesting, isn't it? When you think about personhood on different scales, like there's the microcosmic, you know, real tiny atom, and then there's a super soul within the atom, and then you get bigger, and there's a one-celled creature, and you get bigger, there's a multi-celled creature, and you get bigger, and it's us. And we have so many little creatures within our big creature body, right? We're like a universe. How many cells in the body?
10 billion or something.
Billions. Billions.
Even 10 times more bacteria.
Bacteria. Yeah, there's more bacteria than human cells in our body. You can go into the lower intestines or something like that. They're all over the place. And they're favorable fauna. Most of them.
Always, yeah.
For most of us. And so therefore, look at it on a cosmic scale, or even forget about the cosmic scale, because we're talking about the Earth right now. So it makes sense. The Gaia hypothesis is the Earth is an entity. And you have circulatory systems on the Earth. You have all sorts of different systems that are analogous to the systems in the body. In fact, when you study the ratios, they're very similar. Mm-hmm. The ratios from the microcosmic to the macrocosmic scale are very similar. Like with the planets in the solar system, the ratios are very similar to like the spinal column and things like that. There was one person, actually I went to his school. I won't mention the name of his school, by the way. He was a German. Austrian, I think. Went to Waldorf school, anyway. And they actually scientifically showed us these things. Mm. Rudolf Steiner. Mm. You've heard of him before, right? So the Earth, getting back to the point, the Earth is a person. Bhumi. Yeah, that's the personification. But it's actually a person. It's in one sense, it's her body. She can manifest other bodies, like the body of a cow that she did when Maharaj Parikshit was attacking the cow and the bull. Not Maharaj Parikshit, the Kali was attacking the cow and the bull, and Maharaj Parikshit was protecting the cow and the bull. But still, this Earth, you know, what we're sitting on, whether it's concrete or this, it's just part of her body. And anyway, I don't want to get too much into ecology. I mean, human beings are getting to be like a cancer at this point.
Parasitic cancer.
Yeah, parasitic cancer. And you know what happens when you have parasitic cancer? She's not going to die, I tell you that. She gets rid of the cancer, which is us. So, and things happen on a larger scale, too. You know, a larger universal scale that integrate with the medium or microcosmic or the middle macrocosmic scale. Like, you know, asteroids may hit the Earth and then, you know, wipes out all of us. So things, you know, everything is happening in coordination. It's really interesting if you think about it. So, getting back to the point of Hiranyaksha, Mr. Goldeyes. Mr. Goldeyes disturbed somehow or other the balance of the Earth. It fell into the garbage.
What did he do? He took all the gold out, wasn't it? What did he do? Because Prabhupada not, made that comparison.
He made the comparison,
oil.
But it probably didn't really specifically explain. It didn't specifically, maybe in one of the Puranas it's explained, but not in the Bhagavatam. But somehow or other he did something to disturb the balance of the Earth. And the Earth went into the Garbhodak Ocean, sank into the Garbhodak Ocean. And when the Earth sank into the Garbhodak Ocean, the demigods prayed for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to help. And Lord Brahma was thinking, you know, what can I do about the whole thing? And guess where Lord Bor appeared? From his nostril. He appeared from his nostril. I mean, I like to read about it. I have some of the Bhagavatam here.
It was just when he was thinking about it.
Yeah, just when he was thinking, what can I do? You know, that's what happens when you're a pure devotee. I mean, Krishna arranges a solution. In an unusual way. Not in the way that you would be predicting, you know, you think Krishna, you know, just appear there and kill him, you know. But then all of a sudden Krishna comes out of your nose. That's pretty interesting, isn't it?
I mean, only Krishna can think of that.
Yeah, listen to this. Here's the Bhagavatam. Third canto, 13th chapter, text 17. Brahma thought, while I've been engaged in the process of creation, the earth has been inundated by a deluge. And has gone down to the depths of the ocean. What can we do to engage in this matter of creation? It is best that the Almighty Lord direct us. Remember also that this Bhagavatam story amalgamates two appearances of Lord Bor. So one time, Hiranyaksha caused the earth to go down. Another time, it was a deluge, which means a flood. You know, just some imbalance in the universe.
It was a curse, I heard.
Curse. But anyway, there's two amalgamations of two pastimes. And it's really not, what was that? It's really not important, like historically, which one we're dealing with, because the Vedas mainly deal with Siddhanta. You know, sometimes there's some stories, yeah, that details are changed a little bit, but the Siddhanta is correct. That's really important to understand. Mm-hmm. So, and this story actually happened, but whether it happened, everything we're reading about happened during the first or the second is really not important, but it happened. So, O sinless Vidura, all of a sudden, while Brahma was engaged in thinking, a small form of a boar came out of his nostril. Can you imagine, you know, one time you're thinking... and a little pig comes out of him. And a boar is not just a pig. A boar is a pig with tusks on it.
Mm. Must have been painful.
I don't know. It wasn't painful. It was small. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen a boar in person. I have. When I was young, we had an island in the Bahamas, and my father let me stay there to meditate. And at night, maybe you heard me tell this story before, I thought I'd be peaceful, Om Shanti Shanti. But at night, and the problem is I couldn't stay inside because our generator was outside. This is about 100 meters away. So to start the generator, I had to walk outside in the dark. And
they're very dangerous.
They're very dangerous creatures, and wild boars. Actually, Arjuna was attacked by a demon in the shape of a boar when he was meditating on Lord Shiva. Mm-hmm. And Lord Shiva killed the boar. Anyway, so the measurement of the creature was no more than the upper portion of the thumb. So it started out, I mean, it must start a little smaller to get out of the nose, you know. But at least when he came out...
Maybe Lord Brahma is a little bigger than we are.
No, he is bigger, but it's Lord Brahma's thumb he's talking. It's Lord Brahma's thumb.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't our thumb. You know, it was Lord Brahma's thumb. It's proportionate. So obviously, you know, it came out and then... Poof, and in front of it. Like that. And just meditating, what am I going to do about this problem, Krishna?
Very unconventional.
Yeah, unconventional. I mean, Krishna, when Krishna does things, he doesn't follow the rules. A descendant of Bharata, while Brahma was observing him, that boar became situated in the sky, and he expanded more, in a wonderful manifestation as gigantic as a great elephant. In other words, like, while you're looking at it, it goes, expands, like, dramatically in, like, 2 seconds. It means while you're looking at it, it means just a second or two. Wow. What have God wrought? So, struck with wonder at observing the wonderful boar-like form in the sky, Brahma, with great Brahmins like Marichi, as well as the Kumaras and Manu, began to inquire in various ways. Is this some extraordinary entity come in the pretense of a boar? It is very wonderful that he has come from my nose. I mean, I'm sure that he wasn't saying it like that. He wasn't saying, isn't it wonderful? He was saying, it's, oh my God, it's come out of my nose. I mean, I'm sure he was shocked with the whole thing. First of all, this boar was seen no bigger than the tip of a thumb. So obviously, as I said, he was referring to his own thumb, not our thumb. And within a moment, he was as large as a stone. My mind is perturbed. Is he the supreme personality of Godhead Vishnu? While Brahma was deliberating with his sons, the supreme Godhead Vishnu roared tumultuously like a great mountain. The omnipotent supreme personality of Godhead enlivened Brahma and the other highly elevated brahmanas by again roaring with his uncommon voice, which echoed in all directions. When the great sages and thinkers who are residents of Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satchaloka heard the tumultuous voice of Lord Boar, which was the all-auspicious sound of the all-merciful Lord, they chanted auspicious chants from the three Vedas. Playing like an elephant, he entered into the water after roaring again in reply to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees. The Lord is the object of the Vedic prayers, and thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Boar flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and as he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks, you know, pure white tusks. Pretty amazing. He was personally the supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, and was therefore transcendental, yet because he had the body of a hog, he searched after the earth by what?
Smell.
Smell. His tusks were fearful, and he glanced over the devotee brahmanas, engaged in offering prayers. Thus he entered the water, diving into the water like a great mountain. Lord Boar divided the middle of the ocean, and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord, O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection. Lord Boar penetrated the water with his hooves, which were like sharp arrows, and found the limits of the ocean, although it was unlimited. He saw the earth, the resting place for all living beings. lying as it was in the beginning of creation, and he personally lifted it. So Lord Bor very easily took the earth on his tusks and got it out of the water. Thus he appeared very splendid. Then his anger glowing like the Sudarshan wheel, he immediately killed the demon Aranyaksha, although he tried to fight with the Lord. So that's one description in the 13th chapter, and there's many prayers that the sages offered. And then later on, in the 18th chapter, there's an elaborate description of the fighting with Aranyaksha. So here, in the 13th chapter, it just says he killed him. But in the 18th chapter, you get into the details of the fighting, all the fun stuff. So, So, yeah, this is Maitreya speaking. Maitreya continued, the proud and falsely glorious Daitya, Daitya means the demon, paid very little heed to the words of Varuna, because actually the point is he was looking for a fight and he challenged Varuna first. And Varuna said, you know, we're just old. You know, you fight someone who can really defeat you. You know, this is also very chivalrous too, that someone is looking for an equal battle. You know, a chivalrous person is not going to attack a little kid. He's going to attack someone of equal strength. So he went to Varuna. Varuna said, you know, I can't handle this. You know, I surrender. So, but you better fight with the Lord who's just appeared. And Narada Muni told Aranyaksha where Lord Bor was. Narada Muni does that, you know.
Always.
He always gets everybody, not in trouble, but he always helps with the Lord's pastimes like that. He said, look, he's in the ocean, the depths of the ocean. Then Aranyaksha went into the ocean. This is a little different than the other story, but he went into the ocean. He saw the Lord bearing the earth upwards on the ends of his tusks and robbing him of his splendor with his reddish eyes. The demon laughed. Oh, an amphibious beast. Amphibious means an animal that can function in the water and also at land, and in this particular case, in the air. The demon addressed the Lord, best of the demigods, dressed in the form of a boar, just hear me. The earth is entrusted to us, the inhabitants of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence and not be hurt by me. So you see, if you read the Puranas, the demons are continually fighting with the demigods over possession of the earth.
And that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's like, somehow the earth is like a prize for them. For example, before the Mahabharata war, the demons actually took birth on the earth, and the demigods had to follow them by taking birth on the earth, too. It's like an interplanetary war. So there was something, you know, the earth is an important battleground, too, or at least a prize. And then the demon actually insults Krishna. You rascal, you have been nourished by our enemies to kill us, and you have killed some demons by remaining invisible. Oh, fool, your power is only mystic, so today I shall enliven my kinsmen by killing you. The demon continued, when you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations of sacrifice and devotional service will also automatically cease to exist like trees without roots. Although the Lord was pained by the shaft-like abusive words of the demon, he bore the pain, but seeing that the earth in the end of his tusks was frightened. So there's the earth being a person again. He said, the earth is frightened. He rose out of the water just as an elephant emerges with a female companion when assailed by an alligator. Now, there's actually something very rasika there. Because the earth is compared to a female companion here. And the Lord is compared to an elephant. So it turns out that when the Lord lifted the earth with his tusks, the Lord also impregnated the earth at the same time. As we find from the Brahma Sanghita, Angani Yasha Shakalendriya Dritimanti, the Lord has interchangeable senses. He can do anything with any one of his senses. I think you all know that already. And so he impregnated the earth, and there was a nice little boy born. What was the boy's name? And that, you all know who have heard me tell the story before. Earth Boy. Boma.
Boma. Bomasura.
Yeah, not that point. Later on in life.
All right, later on.
Later in life. So what happened is the little baby Boma was born. And little baby Boma, he was cute as anything. And he had all sorts of good qualities because he had a great mother and great father. But Bhumi also understood, because she's a demigoddess, something's going to happen in the future, you know, he's going to become a demon. She understood that. But being naturally affectionate to her son as a mother, she said to her husband, Lord Bohr at that time, "Don't kill him, please. Promise you're not going to kill him." And Lord Bohr said to her, "I give you my solemn word that unless you give me permission, I'm not going to kill him." So Krishna always keeps his promise. No, he doesn't. But anyway, so in this case, he did. So what happened is later on, Bhoma started to associate with some creeps, you know, some bad guys. And he, by bad association, he became Bhomasura. And later on, he kidnapped 16,100 princesses. You know the story in Krishna book? That was Bhomasura. And so Krishna came to rescue the girls. I mean, Krishna is the original hero who rescues women. When I was young, you'd always... Nowadays, they don't have stories like that. You always see, like, even cartoons about heroes who would rescue women who were tied to railroad tracks. You ever see that stuff? Nowadays, you don't. I mean, the heroes are like anti-heroes now. They're just like dirty creeps, isn't it?
Yeah.
But in the old days, you know, heroes were actually heroes. They risked their lives, saved the woman, and the woman embraced them and said, "My hero." And they lived happily ever after. Nice. You know, all these are Snow White and Cinderella and all these other... So Krishna's like the original hero like that. Of course, I don't know if any of you have seen this cartoon with the Dudley Do-Right. No. None of the Canadian Mounties. Anyway, you haven't seen that. That was before your time.
Oh, yeah, and Snidely.
Snidely Whiplash.
Snidely Whiplash.
And he was a guy who kept tying poor Nell into tracks, to railroad tracks. And Dudley Do-Right would rescue her just before the train ran over her. You know, this is a continual story. It happened again and again in the cartoons. You know, the train was like 10 meters away, and he just rides on his horse, you know, and snatches her away at the final moment. So we find the same thing. So the original form of that is with Krishna. So you have... So Krishna came to rescue these princesses. And what happened is that, of course, he was fighting. There was this demon Mura, and all sorts of details in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, how he fights. He's on the back of Garuda. But he's also coming with Satyabhama at the same time. Now, Satyabhama, of course, is she who Bhumi expands from. In other words, Bhumi is an expansion of Satyabhama. So Krishna's on the back of Garuda, and he's fighting with this Bhomasura, his own son. And this Bhomasura is attacking them. And Satyabhama says, "Kill him already." And Krishna said, "Thank you for your permission." And he kills him. So Krishna had a funny way of getting permission from Bhumi to kill his own son. Interesting, isn't it? That story is told by the Acharyas. You've heard that story before, right? It's interesting. So getting back to Lord Bohr. So when Lord Bohr picked up the Earth planet, it's not just that he picked her up, you know, he had a conjugal relationship with his tusks. So, anyway. The demon, it's described, not only had gold eyes, it's described he had gold hair. He was blonde. Blonde like a Swedish girl. So... It's not that people who are blonde are demons. I mean, don't believe me.
Okay, good to know.
They have blonde people in the spiritual world, too.
May I remind you that I'm not blonde?
All right, whatever. But in Sweden, you see all these blonde people. So he had gold hair and tusks, because people in Sweden don't have tusks.
Not anymore.
He gave chase to the Lord while he was rising from the water, even as an alligator would chase an elephant. Roaring like thunder, he said, "Are you not ashamed of running away before a challenging adversary? There is nothing reproachable for shameless creatures." So the Lord, I'll summarize a lot of this. He placed the earth within his sight in the surface of the water and transferred to her his energy. in the form of the ability to float on water. So that's like Sankarshan, gravity. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, the earth is mostly water. But this is the Garbhodak water, which is not actually the same H2O we have on the earth planet. While the enemy stood looking on Brahma, the creator of the universe extolled the Lord and other demigods rained flowers. The demon, who had a wealth of ornaments, bangles, and beautiful golden armor on his body, chased the Lord from behind with a great mace. The Lord tolerated his piercing ill words, but in order to reply to him, he expressed his anger. The personality of Godhead said, and this is real chivalrous stuff, you know, it's not just killing. Indeed, we are creatures of the jungle, and we are searching after hunting dogs like you. One who is freed from the entanglement of death has no fear from the loose talk of which you are indulging, for you are bound by the laws of death. Certainly we have stolen the charge of the inhabitants of Vasatala and have lost all shame. Although bitten by your powerful mace, I shall stay here in the water for some time because having created enmity with a powerful enemy, I have now no place to go. So anyway, there's this chivalrous talk back and forth. And the demon, thus being challenged by the personality of Godhead, became angry and agitated, and he trembled in anger like a challenged cobra. In other words, Krishna wanted to make him angry so he could enjoy that rasa exchange. And we see the same thing in Braj, that Krishna wants to make Radharani angry sometimes. And of course, it's not the same exact thing, but it's Krishna enjoys that taste, you know, the anger relationship. Sometimes anger.